to come on, that is which places today for Moshe Abelman. He's deep into the writings of the Achronim. I don't know. If anyone has comments regarding that book that we're doing, Rationals of this Mysticism, on or off Zoom, a list, please let me know. Just to be transparent, the author of Slifkin is in Cherem by a certain Rebbeim in Israel. So if anyone wants to stay out of trouble, maybe they should listen to it. I've been asking around the significance of that, because Rabbi Riskin himself is putting a Cherem when he came to Baltimore, when he got to Baltimore. And I purposely went to hear him, not quite knowing what Cherem was. And when people asked me, what did he speak about, I told my friends, I can't tell you because he's in Cherem. It's really raining outside my window. So is it raining up in your neighborhoods? I guess all this wet, all the rain is good. Of course. Good morning, Ramosha. See if we can see you. Not yet. There we are. Hi, good morning.
Okay, Tov.
Good morning. You're around the corner, so it's probably raining for you also.
Sort of, yeah. I'm assuming that other, even those who are farther away.
Yeah, sometimes we see it rains on like one hill and not the next, but this one I think is all over the gush. Introducing Ramosha Abramit, 10 o'clock sharp on a Thursday morning as we zip along with Zoom with their father, Shkolo. Thank you very much for switching time slots today, Rav Moshe. We'll continue with the literature of Torah Baal Peh in with Achronim.
Very good. You're getting it, Bruce. Just by the time we're finishing. Okay. So basically last week
I'll try not to make the same mistake.
Okay, Irving. This time you know who it is. Okay, the previous shiur, we focused more on broader approaches in the study of Gemara, the pupil, the akilut, the analytical, Chris. And then towards the end of the shiur, I began to present some of the more known authors and Sfarim in Achronic literature on the Gemara. I'd like to continue with that today, and depending how long that takes, begin the topic of the halachic writings. If not, we will keep that for next week. The last that I mentioned last shiur was Rabbi Yaakov Yehoshua, the book, The Pnei Yehoshua, lived in the years 1680 to 1756. I go back to The Pnei Yehoshua, which Bruce had picked up then, interestingly, gives a lot of attention to sort of supporting or responding to the criticism to Rashi that is found in Bali Atosfa. The Pnei Yehoshua attempts to answer that. That is interesting and important to know, because in that sense, he continues actually the tradition of his grandfather, who wrote a book that is a bit less known. Gine Shlomo, his name was Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel, Rabbi Yosef Chariv, and the Chariv, he lived from 1570 to 1648, which means in the earlier part of the Achronic period. It's already almost 100 years into the Achronic period, but the earlier part of the Achronic period. And at that point, last names were not exactly something that was very common. If you do find such a thing, it's usually indicative of some association. It could be association to particular people, it could be association to a profession, or in this case, Harif, he was known for the sharpness of his mind and received that sort of almost like a nickname, but that name that accompanied him, Harif. The Yeshua Heschel Harif wrote, as I mentioned, the book Megine Shlomo. The book in itself already tells us what its purpose and main intent is, Megin, to protect Shlomo, which at least there is some kind of Masorah tradition that the Yeshua Heschel was a descendant of Rashi. I don't know, and I didn't check how accurate that is considered, but there is such a tradition. And if that's the case, then so is the Pnei Yehoshua, his grandson, a descendant of Rashi. In any case, the book Megine Shlomo is known, but it's definitely not as well known as the Pnei Yehoshua. Interestingly, the name of the book, Pnei Yehoshua, was again actually something that the grandfather used it in a book, not on Shas, not Chidushim on Shas, but as a name for his response to book, the Book of Tshuvot, that you should not confuse between, if you come across the Tshuvot or Shut Pnei Yehoshua, that's actually Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel Harif's grandfather, and you find the Pnei Yehoshua class, that's the grandson, Rabbi Akiva Yehoshua Falk, the famous Pnei Yehoshua. Here we move on to another well-known book, actually, again, when talking about the commentary on Shas, and that is the Turei Evin. Turei Evin is written by Rabbi Leib Barab Asher Ginsberg. He is further into, I would say, already mid-chronic period. He lived in the years 1695 to 1785. He wrote two books that were chidushim on different masechtos. One is the Turei Evin, and the other is the Gevurot Ari. Again, a play on his name, Aryeh Ari. Though probably best known for his halachic work, is Tshuvo the Shagat Aryeh. Anybody ever heard the Shagat Aryeh? That's the same person who wrote the Turei Evin and the Gevurot Ari, Rav Aryeh Leib Barab Asher Ginsberg. The Turei Evin, one should know, is a book that is often quoted and related to in analytical learning of Shas to this day, and really receives a place of importance, especially some of his Chidushim and Megillah, and that sort, he put some that are used by Talmidei Chachamim and Megidei Shiurim and writers of Chidushim to this day. The next book I'd like to relate to is the book that is known in its Rosh Tevot, the Tzlach, which in its full name is Tzion Nefesh Chaya. Nefesh Chaya is in reference to his mother. It's a book that he sort of dedicated to the memory of his mother. The author is Rabbi Cheskel Landau, who again is probably more known for his halachic work, the Noda B'Yehuda. But in any case, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, again, a mid-achronic period author. He lived in the years 1730 to 1793. It's less long than some of the other books that we mentioned here, though it's a book that does get mentioned in not a few places where we find people who write on Shas. The image of Rabbi Cheskel Landau was a well-known. Next, I move on to an interesting book known as the Hafla. It's actually a misnomer, or it's a name of a volume, but it actually contains in it three different books. The book is, first of all, written by Rav Pinchas Bar Tzvi Hirsch Halevi Horowitz, or Pinchas Halevi Horowitz. He lived from the years 1730 to 1805. And as I said, his book actually contains three independent books, and each section, each of these, really has its own name. One aspect is Chidushim on Masechet Ketubot, focusing a lot on the Ketuvah aspect, and is called Sefer Ketuvah, but is an important book of Chidushim when learning Masechet Ketubot. The other book is also Seder Nashim, Masechet Kiddushin, and is known as Sefer HaMikneh. That's from the term of Kinyan, Haisha Niknet, which opens Masechet Kiddushin. And therefore, he called the Kiddushin that he wrote on Masechet Kiddushin Sefer HaMikneh. The last section is Drushim on the Torah. It's interesting, okay, that they're bound together, they're put into one entity as this concept of the Sefer HaFla. Something, I think, on how he saw the relationship between his Chidushim on Shas alongside the Drushim of the Torah, that he saw them as not second rate, but something of importance equivalent to the Chidushim on Shas. There are other Chidushim on Shas that were published later on of his, all under the category of the Hafla. And using this broad category for the three books that we mentioned, Hafla, and using it as a title for all the Chidushim of Pinchas Halevi Horowitz on Shas. Here we have a book that you'll find in many places. And it's important to note, because sometimes you'll find somebody referring to a Sefer HaKetuvah or a Sefer HaMikneh. The other time they'll write the Hafla. You have to know that it's basically the same author, and if it's on Kedushin and Ketuvah, it's actually the same book. Here we move on to a fascinating work, a chronic work, the work of Reb Aryeh Lehi HaKohen Heller, who lived already at the end, sort of borderline middle to late chronic period. He was born in 1745 and passed away in 1812. In other words, in the latter half of the 18th century into the beginning of the 19th century. Rav Aryeh Lehi HaKohen Heller wrote some extremely important books in the tradition of learning. One that is more specific in the sense of Chidushim to Shas is a book known as Shev Shmaitetah. as it may be pronounced in other places as the same shmeisis. Okay, if the, depends how you express the kaf. The same shmeitata, Aramaic term, seven. Shmuot is the original terminology for what we often call today sugyot. Okay? There is, in the academic world, there is a distinction that is made between sugyot and shmuot. Something that I'm going to touch on. I also don't really fully understand what their complete distinction is, but in any case, it's definitely true that the term Shmuel was the original term that was used, what we usually define today as Sugyot.
So these authors in general, they're writing for a very select target market, it seems, as I listen to it.
Most of them are writing for the scholarly Torah student or other Rabbanim, some of them to an extreme. In other words, some of these books are written, or parts of them are written, very, very shorthand. In other words, comments. See, this
is it a very modern phenomenon to attempt to use books to educate the Jewish public at large? Those who are I don't want to call them outreach books, but books that explain things to people with a less formal, in-depth education as a way of upping the bar for people? Or is that just a very modern phenomenon?
The answer to your question, as I often answer your questions, is yes and no. Okay, now what do I mean? I think that even today, if you were to take books that are written as shiurim, commentary on Tras, you will find few, if any, that are meant for the broader public.
No, for sure, Kahanan, Tras.
I don't mean
Tras commentary.
Kahanan, for example, tried to do something, some work on the Tosfot to sort of bring it to the simpler, less learned person to make it available. There are here and there attempts of that sort. But as a whole, when you talk about the range of what I'm referring to here, chidushim, shiurim, and shas, most of them are not meant or intended to expose things to the broad public. Where do you find this? You find it more in halachic books, you find it in machzavic books, and you find it in the commentaries to the Torah.
Because we see that the Rambam wrote in a vernacular, hoped to educate his entire world, it seems. And since you don't see that in a common, simple language meant to educate the masses, whether it's
in code. When you say the Rambam, where do you see that in the Rambam?
Doesn't he do that in the Mishnah Torah or Sefer Mitzvot?
So first of all, you're talking about one of the Rambam's books, the Mishnah Torah. Okay, maybe in my mind the most important, but one of the Rambam's books. I don't think that you could say that in a serious sense about some of his other books.
No, of course not. But I'm just wondering if other writers have done something similar.
Where I would find in the Rambam more accurately, actually, I think it's in his Akdamot, his introduction. But the Mishnah Torah, I'm not sure that was the Rambam's intent or purpose. And yes, that's in halachic realm. And in halachic realm, we find the similar kind of things in the later period.
I asked that question because by the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, a lot of Jews are going to be drifting away. And I'm wondering if there's any attempt at any of these very erudite authors to try to bring Jews back from some book on some topic.
That's what I'm saying. There are books. We saw that. We saw that definitely through the commentaries to the Torah. Maybe there's definitely such an attempt. Some of the Machshava books attempt to do that. I think you're expanding a little bit the period of drifting away from the world of Torah Mitzvot. There always was a drift. There always were certain people who reason drifted away. I think you expanded it a little beyond what it really is, but okay. There are books that come to answer that. We saw them commentaries in Torah. Many of the other writings of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, for example, come to do that. In other words, there are others who have done that. That existed, as I said, that existed also in Shomer. But one last comment about bears into the Rambam. First of all, the Rambam isn't all that simple, content-wise, and you see what kind of problems are raised. But also, interestingly, you see the Rambam as something that is open to the broad public. The truth of the matter is...
Meaning it's the... I'm told that the language
is... The point is that I'm not sure that that was the way the Rambam saw it. If nothing else, all his other books, the Rambam writes in Arabic. The language that... is the one book that he writes in Hebrew, and I think that it says something in the sense of he saw it more as canonization of halacha. He didn't see it as necessarily a book that's serving the broader public, but actually going towards Talmidei Chachamim to give a book of psikat halacha and so on. So I'm not even sure that that was the Rambam's thinking in the Mishnah Torah. Today, yes, we have. Most of us have this sort of capability of Hebrew, and it's written relatively in, definitely considering the period of time it was written, Hebrew, yes, it serves in it that way, but I don't know if that was the intention.
Oh, yeah,
getting back to your basic question, the answer is that as a whole, yes, there are such books. As far as Chidushim and the Shach,
no, of course.
I mean, if any.
But the Rambam writing in Arabic is like today, a Gadol in Torah writing a book in English.
Correct. But that's exactly it. If a Gadol in Torah wrote all his books in English, and you write one book in Hebrew, would you say that that is the book that's directed to the broad public?
No.
And that's why I'm questioning that assumption as far as the Mishnah Torah. Okay. So, we were talking about, Sev Shmaitata literally means seven sugyot. It takes seven complex sugyot and creates one of the most fascinating and deep and challenging writings on the sugyot and seeing them in a broad sense and seeing all the aspects and details of it to the extent that and that's where you see it's important. Not only became a sort of measure that, that means that I'm dealing with a broad sense of Gedolei HaGedolei, periods, our day, wrote commentaries or wrote things on the Shev Shmaita. It just shows how it was perceived as a core book in understanding those particular sugyot and in understanding the way of learning as a whole. Rabbi Leva Cohen Heller, the same Rabbi Arya Leva Cohen Heller writes two other extremely important books in halachic world, about the halachic world, but just I'll throw out the names because I think that some of you may have heard those names. The Ktsot HaChoshen, as it's called, and the Avnei Milui. It just shows you who this person is and how central his Torah is in the breadth of world of Torah. Another personality, Torah is well known, is Rabbi Akiva ben Moshe Ginz. Eager, or as he's usually referred to as Rabbi Akiva Eager. Okay, Rabbi Akiva Eiger is, again, this borderline into the later Achronic period. He lives in the latter half of the 18th century, the early part of the 19th century, 1761 to 1837. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, when referring to the Gemara, I'm not talking about the Yazal's comments to the Shulchan Aruch, but in reference to the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva Eiger writes a collection of chidushim and hagot. As hagot, sometimes are very short, and often are just a question of correcting a version or telling you to look here and to look there and see the comparisons. Sometimes we construct what is it that he's trying and coming to tell us. Extremely analytical in his chidushim, and is a base for the more analytical kind of learning that takes place later on in the Achronic period. Then we have a book that maybe I would not have included in this same group as far as its exposure or familiarity, but I think that should be related to. The book is called Keren Ora. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of the Keren Ora. Keren Ora is written by Reb Yitzchak Bereb Aaron Minkowski. Lived from the years 1788 to 1852. In other words, basically he functions already mostly in the 19th century, getting into that later part of the Achronic period. Keren Ora is very much an analytical book of chidushim on different masechtot and shas. I don't know to what extent the Keren Ora would have become or received a recognition, if not that part of his chidushim he wrote on kodshim. When whether and the influence of the Chafetz Chaim or the Brisk approach and the others, when the focus on learning Kodshim in certain circles became more significant, then the Keren Ora was a base for analytical thought and study of Kodshim. Once he's exposed to his writings in Kodshim, then also, obviously, you associate to his other works and other masechet, so that you find some important Talmidei Chachamim repeatedly referring, and you see with a lot of respect to the Keren Ora. But I believe, at least my impression is, that it comes in, and most of those that you see that relate to it are those who on one level or another associated to the study of Kodshim, and then referred to him also in other places, but truly in Kodshim, he is a basis and a foundation for analytical study. I'd like to relate to a few other images. Some of them are extremely important in two groups. One is the Brisk world of Torah. So the forefathers of Brisk, Reb Chaim and his children, at least the ones that are in importance to this, the Reb Yitzchak Zev, the Griz or Velvel, as he's often called, and his other son, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, father of the Rav. Most of their writings focus around the Rambam. There are chidushim and shas that were mostly kept in manuscripts later published, but the main Torah were often presented through the Rambam. through the Rambam, then it also shed light on understanding the Sugyot. But there are maybe two very important images who are more or less parallel in their time, slightly older than the other, both Talmidim of Chaim Soloveitchik, Brisk Rav, Chaim Brisk, right? Chidushim and Shas become cornerstones of learning in many analytical books. Therefore, most or at least in the non-Hasidic world, but I think even in the Hasidic world, most yeshivot are on some level or another exposed to these two authors. The first is Reb Shimon Shkop, Reb Shimon Yehuda HaKohen Shkop, 1859 to 1939, dies literally at the beginning of World War II. He's saved from really encountering the Holocaust and the Nazis, but he lives into World War II. As a matter of fact, supposedly his death, the day of his death, there was some kind of gathering of local rabbanim from the area in which he sort of gave a presentation. He was sick already. He gave a presentation to them, issues of education under the circumstances, and then that afternoon, he passed away. In any case, Shimushka is known for both his book, Shara Yosher, and Chidushei Reb Shimon Shkop. The approach that Reb Shimon Shkop takes is, on the one hand, very much affected by his background and his basis by Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisk, and on the other hand, takes a direction that is somewhat different than the classic Brisk writings. Reb Shimon Shkop takes a somewhat broader perspective in how he approaches certain issues. I think gives less weight to the Rambam and the classic Brisk approaches. He really gets this freedom or independence in his use of what he got from the Chaim because of his interaction afterwards. Shimon Shkop marries the daughter of Reb Lazer Gordon, Rosh Yeshiva in Telz, and goes to become a Ram Rosh Masifta in Telz. He teaches there for many years. Later on, he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva in Grodno. As a matter of fact, in 1929, Reb Shimon Shkop was a Rosh Yeshiva, I think what we would call Ram, but being in YU, it's always called Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, otherwise or YU. He teaches there for a few months, but is asked by the Chafetz Chaim to come back to Europe, and he goes back to Europe to head Yeshiva there. In any case, Shimon Shkop, therefore, is exposed to different analytical approaches, not just the Brisk approach, and I think that he sort of brings that into his individualistic and unique approach in analyzing and writing Chidushim on the Shas. His books, Shimon Shkop, Chidushim and Shari Yosher, are definitely books that in many yeshivot, particularly in the Haredi circles are books of centrality in and learning. You'll hear Rabbeim, you'll hear Talmidim when speaking about a sugya. The Shimon says this, Shimon Shkop says that, or Shimon Shkop, Shimon Shkop. I remember as a student in high school, it's interesting because when I got to Har Etzion, Shimon Shkop's does not or never really played a central part, not by Rav Lichtenstein and not by Rav Amital or his students, but in high school, Yativ Meir, and many of my Rabbeim, when they would say Chidushim on the Gemara, right, they would often mention or quote Rav Shimon Shkop. The other image that again is a Talmud, is a contemporary of Rav Shimon Shkop, a Talmud of Rav Chaim Brisk, and he is a Talmud to the extent that the image of Rav Chaim Brisk accompanies him probably day and night throughout his entire life. There's a story that the day he passed away, and he was sick, and he was very sick, and suddenly he sort of wakes up and says, "The Rebbe is coming," referring to Rav Chaim Brisk, and starts giving over and saying Torah. And Chaim Brisk. Part of the story, or frankly, some of the story is he tried to get up, he was too weak. And he fell, and then they put him back in bed, and he was lying there, and he was, until his death, he was just saying Torah to the Chaim. Whether the story is 100% accurate this way or that doesn't make a difference, but what it does do is reflects to the extent that this personality was a person who was embedded and attached to the Torah and the style of Rav Chaim Brisk. And that person is Rav Baruch Ber Leibovitz, lived from 1870 to 1939. Being I didn't write it clearly, I'm not sure if it's 1870 or 1876 to 1939 as well. In other words, again, he dies at the beginning of World War II. He is known for his book, the Birkat Shmuel, but also the Chidushim. Chidushim of Baruch Ber Leibovitz. He has Chidushim Shiurim of Baruch Ber Leibovitz. To a great extent, Baruch Ber Leibovitz is responsible more than the actual Briskers. There's more than the Chaim or the Griz or Moshe in bringing to the broad public the Torah, the Brisk approach in learning Gemara. Because remember, I said, there's what's called the stenciling of Rav Chaim, but most of what we have, and none of the Briskers wrote a lot for different reasons, but there is a lot that they write on the Rambam. So now, when you learn it, you then incorporate it into your learning Gemara. But it's not written in a systematic approach to Gemara. Reb Baruch Ber writes his chidushim as books written on the Gemara. And as such, brings in the Brisk approach and thinking into the Gemara. And in that sense, I think that he has a major hand in the sort of bringing out of the Brisk learning to the broad world of Yeshivot. And is a poster of Shimon Shkop who opens his own sort of direction. Rav Baruch Ber Leibovitz really stays more with the classic Brisk thinking, terminology, and so on. I think that this is important to note because it also shows us something that happens, and definitely in modern times, that often there is a core idea, a core approach in learning, but it can receive different expressions and different approaches in Talmidim of the same person. I'll give an example, a personal example that I encountered in my own experience learning. I learned my earlier years in Yeshiva, later on again with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I then went to YU and spent 2 years there, the last two full years that Rav Soloveitchik gave shiurim. And I had the pleasure, even though he was at that point already ill and more limited, but still hearing shiurim from Rav Soloveitchik himself. And in different opportunities and free time, I had the opportunity several times of listening to shiurim that Rav Herschel Schechter gave to the Kollel YU. You're talking about Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Schechter, who, without any question, are two of the most central Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik. And I can tell you that their approaches, what they did with the same Torah of Rav Soloveitchik, was completely different, each in their own way, but it was also different than the way Rav Soloveitchik himself presented Torah. And there you see that sort of evolvement and development of an approach. There's some core approach, but it receives its own expressions. A similar kind of thing, I think, existed in reference to Rav Chaim Brisk's Torah, in the sense that Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz remains, in his own part, but remains a lot more attached to the classicness of Chaim, while Shimon Shkab really takes it, but incorporates it into his own direction, develops his own world and his own presentations. Finally, I'd like to refer to one other group that I think would be unfair if we didn't at least mention some of the chidushim and the lamdanu that exists in that world. And that is the Hasidic world. You know, in a classic sense, there's always that outlook at the Hasidic world that it's more of a, you know, simplistic, superficial world that answers that desire to disseminate Torah to the broad public, and therefore all kind of Kabbalistic ideas, thoughts, and so on. But we don't associate the Hasidic world with in-depth learning of Shas. And the reality is that many of the Hasidic yeshivot really took, and some of them even to this day, though most of them have been affected by the Lithuanian learning, but some of them, even to this day, take an approach of more of a acute kind of learning, less analytical, in-depth than the typical Lithuanian yeshivot. And yet, there are several significant works of in-depth Torah that come from Hasidic Rabbeim. Not all Hasidic Rabbeim were great Torah scholars, but on the other hand, to say that all of them are not would be dishonest and misleading. So I'd like to mention just a few here, but again, it's not saying that these are the only ones.
Roger?
Yeah.
When a Hasidic rite is right, again, is the target audience just their group or all Hasidic?
When it comes to Chidushim, I can't see it being something that is meant for the broad public.
No, I mean the other Hasidim as opposed to.
I think it's, then they write it. Stylistically, there is certain effects of some of the language, the Kabbalistic aspects of the Hasidut, but the writing, I think, is meant to just integrate to the broad world of analysis and study of Sas. I don't think that the Hasidic aspect stands at the forefront. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think.
Now they're writing in Yiddish?
No, no, they're not writing in Yiddish. They write in Hebrew. That's, by the way, something that is fascinating. We mentioned before in the Rambam writing in Arabic, right? In the Achronic period, maybe good reasons for it, but in the Achronic period, there are most serious Torah works. I'm not saying that, you know, when you come to drashot on Torah and so on, then sometimes you'll find them in Yiddish because they were presented in Yiddish and then written up. But when you come to in-depth study, be it in outright Gemara study or in Halacha, it's all written in Hebrew. When you see the Hebrew, you see that some of these people knew Hebrew, but it was a limited Hebrew. There's a struggle with the vocabulary, the freedom of vocabulary, yet it's all written in Hebrew. Now, there could be a lot of reasons to it. One reason that I think is a significant aspect to that is simply because there already, A, is an awareness that these books are getting to a broader range, including places where Yiddish is not spoken. But even the Yiddish was different, and therefore the language that is seen as the common language for all Jews, including those who are sitting in Israel and in Syria and in Egypt and wherever it might be, was Hebrew. And I think that motivates some of this design. But in reality, you find, again, I can't think of any that I'm aware of serious, whether analytical works on Shas or in Halacha, that were not written in Hebrew. It may be, I'm not saying that I'm familiar with all the writings, but definitely those that become the central path of Torah are all written in Hebrew.
No, my wife's grandparents in Russia were part of, or great-grandparents, part of Maskilim. And part of what they did was learn Hebrew, and they began these Hebrew journals and papers and articles, which I understand was a stilted Hebrew, but they had an audience of people that already knew Hebrew.
Yeah, but you see, the stilted Hebrew is also a Hebrew because they're trying to use Hebrew in the broad sense of world life. While the Hebrew that's being used in the works on Gemara and Halacha are using a world of its own terminology that already has a basis. But yeah, when it comes to Machshava, you try to write Machshava in Hebrew, even a person like Rav Kook is heavy. but yeah, that's the reality. You mentioned the Maskilim. On the one hand, there is that movement of trying to develop Hebrew. On the other hand, there's a whole facet of the Maskilim, a lot of the Hebrew literature, or the literature books of Jews written in the Maskilim is written in Yiddish. They use Yiddish stuff a lot in their writing. Okay, back to our issue, the Hasidic works on Shas. I'm just mentioning a few, not attempting to say that this is all words. Begin with the Chidushei Harim of Rabbi Yitzchak Meir Alter, lived from 1799 to 1866. Is the founder of the Gur Ger Hasidic dynasty. The Chidushei Harim is a book that is known, is recognized, even in non-Hasidic circles, as a book of Lamdanus. Another book is his grandson's works, the Sfat Emet. The Sfat Emet is a range of books. Most people are familiar with the Sfat Emet in his issue of his drashot and his works on Torah. But Rabbit the Rabbi Yehuda Leib, Baravram Mordechai Alter, wrote the Sfat Emet, lived 1847 to 1905, wrote Chidushin, the Sfat Emet Chidushin and Shas, which are often short, but concise and very significant and meaningful. And his son, okay, remember, Sfat Emet is the grandson of the Chidushi Harim, okay? Sfat Emet's father died at a young age, and Sfat Emet, Yehuda Leib Alter, calls or names his son the name of his father, Avraham Mordechai Alter, becomes known as the Imre Emet. Imre Emet is not a book so much, but it's more really in more Hasidic Torah and Hasidic thought and Parsha and so on, but also has a significant importance for recognition as scholarly work. In any case, you find in the Gur dynasty a serious Torah study, a serious presentation, including Chidushin and Shas that parallel and compare to any of the Chidushin written also by Lithuanian or other Talmidei Chachamim. Another dynasty that is known, is very known for its Lamdanus, its scholarliness in Torah, is the Sachachov dynasty. Rabbi Avraham Bornstein, who lived from 1839 to 1910, is also the founder of the Sachachov Chassidut, writes a book that is somewhere between Halacha and London. Well-known book, The Eglay Tal. I don't think that there is a person who learns the Melachot of Shabbat that is not introduced and does not encounter the Eglay Tal. Eglay Tal is one of the most fundamental books that are written in trying to understand the Lametet Melachot. Tal, Lametet, Eglay Tal, written by Avraham Bornstein. He's also known for another book, but another book that he wrote, the Avnei Nezer. The son of Avraham Bornstein, son of the Eglay Tal, Reb Shmuel Bornstein, also is well known as a great Torah scholar, writes a book known as the Shem Mishmuel. Shem Mishmuel, again, is a book on Torah, but a book on Torah that is accepted, quoted, and related to by non-Hasidic Torah scholars, as receives that recognition of Lamdan. So that, and maybe we have to include in this, though most of their expressions are, if so, it is in the halachic realm, but also the Lubavitch dynasty, where, interestingly, Rav Tavori Zichron Libracha once showed me several parallels. He put in the time to check this, and several parallels of different chidushim that the last Lubavitch Rebbe wrote in his Chidushin and compared him to things that appeared or he heard from Rav Salvechik. The style is different. It's a more Hasidic style, but the conclusions or the directions are very, very similar. So again, also another dynasty that has a lot of in-depth study of Torah, the Lubavitch dynasty, and I think it's important to note that with all the issues and questions and whatnot that might be raised in reference to the depth and the full length of Torah learning of the Hasidic world, there definitely is a lot of serious Torah, including Chidushim and Shas, that come from this Hasidic world. Suffice with that as a survey of Achronic and Shas. If you pay attention carefully, and it was intentional, the focus really ends more or less with 1939. And that I'll explain when I get to the question of what happens in our time and how we're to see the scholars in our time. Therefore, I'm intentionally not relating to works of writings of Chidushim and so on that exist in the last 70, 80 years. That more or less finished this topic. I don't know, we have like 5 minutes. I don't know if it's worth for 5 minutes to start getting into the halachic aspect of the Achronim, or we'll just leave that already for next week. We say, Bruce. You hear me? Being that we finished the survey of the analytical or the Chidushim and Shas, I don't know, for the 4 minutes, 5 minutes that are left, if it's worth starting to get into the halachic, I'll just leave it for next week and we'll deal from there.
Okay, very good.
Okay,
so thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. Be well. Have a good week.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.